Pistons versus Everybody, the Detroit Pistons podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. It is 12:42 a.m. on July 30th, the night of the morning after the NBA draft, I should say. Draft's over. The Detroit Pistons have made all the selections that I foresee that the Detroit Pistons are going to make. They took it all the way down to the wire. You got the 57th overall pick to talk about. But we're gonna do that in a second. So first I want to lay out how this is gonna go down. I was on the uncontested the Oklahoma City Thunder Blue Wire podcast live stream, and so we're gonna take some of that audio. I'm gonna cut it up. That was like a 3-hour live stream. I'm not gonna make you listen to all 3 hours. We're gonna cut that up a little bit. And we mainly talked about Cade and some of the other stuff that happened along the first round. Then it's like, I'm going to cut myself back in and we're going to talk about the second round picks that the Detroit Pistons made, because we didn't really get to those during the live stream because it's 42, 52 and 57. Didn't really expect to get them there. So the next voices you'll hear will be mine and the voices of like Jake and Niffin and Taylor Peterson on the Uncontested. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a little bit.
We got more people hopping in the chat here. Our guy Laz,
Cade Cunningham, number one fan,
the official podcast of the Cade Cunningham fan club. Laz,
how you guys?
How does it feel to have it over? The trade speculation is done, Laz. You don't have to listen to our bullshit about trading up to one anymore. How does it feel?
So it feels amazing. Honestly, it's just like, especially like given how the rest of this draft has gone, it's like, oh God, that could have been us. But it wasn't. And so we just escaped with the best
just
prospect.
A sigh
in the
of relief. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
So Laz, I gotta ask, because you
yeah, go for it.
Go ahead, call me.
Your Jacob's questions mean more over there. Jeez, my goodness. Let's say you're drafting at six for some reason. How would Detroit fans feel about drafting Josh Giddey?
He's so fired up about this.
Would you be happy about that selection?
So after the Killian Hayes fiasco, I think there'd be some very angry fans in the at Little Caesars Arena. However, you guys just took Poku last year, and everybody seems to be on board with that experiment with the knowledge that it was going to be a long-term project. And so maybe there's hope for the Giddey experiment yet. Is he going to play point guard? Is he going to play small forward? Is Shea the point guard? What happened to Teo Maledon? Like, what's going on? What about Kemba? I know Kemba's getting flipped, but like, yeah, this is... It's a weird pick. It's a weird pick.
I think it matches this Thunder. Yeah, this Thunder MO now of getting guys that are big, long, can grab the ball off the rim, can lead a fast break, can pass. Giddey is very Poku-ish to me, I feel like.
Yeah, great feel, right? Like that's the thing they always say about those guys who are tall and can pass. They have great feel, but. Man, how are you going to stop anybody from scoring if your guys get shouldered out of the way by anybody over 230 pounds? This is going to be a rough existence.
Lou Dort.
Oh, that's true. can he guard four people?
Well, we're going to put that theory to the test. Laz, I got to ask, because you tweeted about this earlier today. Whenever the pick officially came through number one, did you yell at your unborn child to the displeasure of your wife?
I did. My unborn child is 37 weeks, so he can definitely hear me and understand what's going on, but he's not out yet. And so he responded in kind. I got a little kick. That was nice.
There you go.
And the wife was not super pleased because she didn't really fully understand what was happening. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. So, I mean, we knew it was going to be Cade, right? Did you ever buy into any of the, oh, they could take Jalen Green, oh, they could trade down to two? Do you think that any of that stuff was ever like legitimately there? Oh, wow. Josh Primo going 12.
12? Moses Moody is sinking, bro. Moses Moody is sinking.
That's crazy.
Primo at that feels like a reach.
That's hell of a reach. Huge reach.
Wow.
Wait, okay, I mean, like, I have to let I have to check the board because, like, I don't even know who's left because things have not exactly gone according
Moody
to plan.
And but Shangoon and gosh,
I don't, Johnson's, I don't,
Keon.
I don't love Shangoon. That's it's a very weird NBA existence.
It's for totally him. Gonna be who the Thunder take at 16. I can see it.
Man,
Primo at 12.
Yeah, that's wild. And I feel like this next pick now, we've got Indiana on the clock now.
This is where
trade. Yeah, Indiana who traded into the first second round pick, presumably for a reason, right? So
true.
Could totally be baking this pick for somebody else.
This feels very like true. The last spot where the Thunder can trade up. Because after this, at pick number 14, trading 16 and 18 for 14 is just an overpay.
Right.
I feel like 13 is the last spot where you can really like justify that.
Very true.
Yeah, I agree with that. And but to answer your question before the Primo thing, the trade noise and everything was interesting, definitely to go through. Once I learned that. Last year, the Pistons actually had Wiseman at number one on their board. That definitely like caused me to like reevaluate like what the team's priorities were going to be like moving forward. It's a callback to Troy Weaver saying like he loves centers and he loves big men. And so you could imagine a world in which right like they get a if their standards were a little bit lower and they got an offer that they liked, they'd be willing to trade down to like two or three and take Evan Mobley. Right. And I think Mobley's going to be a really great player in this league.
Chris Duarte at 13 for Indiana. Sorry, Les.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Wow.
Come on, Moses Moody just suck?
Like, if he ends up with you guys, that'll be pretty good, actually. But, like, he can't, he can't jump. That's kind of a problem.
Yeah, that's fair. He's not extremely explosive.
Yeah. The Thunder have been drafting guys that aren't super explosive, though. Shea's not explosive. Yep. I mean, that wasn't a draft pick, obviously. Poku's not really explosive. Giddy's not explosive.
Wow.
What does Primo, like, do?
Yeah.
Well, hey, great question, because Nick Crane is joining the chat, who talked to Nick, not Nick Primo.
Josh
Primo. Josh Primo. Literally, what, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, Nick?
Yeah, like 2 days ago.
2 days ago. Hey, I also appreciate that you're not in your library anymore. Thank you.
Well, and I'm a white sheet serial killer.
Making references to white sheets and serial killers is not a good combination in the American South, Nick. Go ahead and tell us about Josh Primo, please.
Josh Primo is...
Sorry, Laz.
Just like one of... Say what?
I think I killed Laz. Just go ahead. Just go ahead and talk about Primo.
Keep going, bro. Keep going.
No, it's just one of the smartest young prospects that I've talked to. He just knows his role. Like you think about a lot of these rookies that come in and they think they have to score 20, 30 points a game to be effective. And Primo just seems like the kind of guy. He had the role at Alabama where he only shot six times a game and is still picked in the lottery. So I think it says a lot about him as a prospect and what he could bring to a team.
I'm just curious about all these guys that are available. Which one of these guys is the Donovan Mitchell? Which one of these guys in the teens is going to be the Devin Booker? Which one of these guys is going to be kind of like, you know, on the edge of the lotto? Who's going to be a guy that really turns a franchise around or is a franchise star player? So I'm very curious to see what that is. Because I mentioned you, Nick, earlier, that you thought that Josh Giddey, although you weren't too privy about selecting him at six, you thought he did have star potential. So that's what I mentioned. So you might speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I do think him at six is a bit of a stretch, like you alluded to. But, I mean, 6'7" point guards that can play at the professional level, you know, triple double, pass, rebound, like those guys don't grow on trees. And so obviously Cade Cunningham was the 6'7", 6'8" point guard that everybody wanted, but I guess Giddey is second best option there. But I think that him next to Shea is perfect. I don't know if you could have gotten him at 9 or 10 trading back, but nonetheless I do like the fit.
So does this mean that we're kind of exclusively limiting Shea to two guard status now? Like he's no longer a point guard. We're just kind of letting him operate out of isolations and off of handoffs like he likes to, and not necessarily worrying about him playmaking for others.
I think with what Mark Daigneault's trying to put together here in Oklahoma City is like literally just positionless basketball. I think you see that with Poku getting taken last year. I think you see that with Giddey, with SGA. He's played point guard through small forward in the past couple years. Maybe outside of whoever the center of the future is in Oklahoma City, I think Daigneault sees 1-4 as just fluid. Doesn't matter how big you are, small you are, if you can play multiple positions, you're going to fit in a system.
Detroit Pistons, Cade Cunningham. How cool is that? Oh, man. Just kind of hit me.
I can just casually drop Cade into relevant conversations now because he's a Piston.
That's right. He's a Piston. Oh, man. Are you recording a podcast tonight or do you already record?
Yeah, I'm going to chop this up.
I'm going to send him some audio.
Even better. Let's talk some Cade Cunningham. Well, I kind of have a little bit, but in terms of like fit, like talk to me about him next to Killian. With Stewart. Like, what are you thinking in terms of his fit with the team? Not that it really matters. So you just, at that point, you just take the best player.
He breaks the rule, right? You now fit around Cade.
Exactly. Well,
I mean, like, I think he already did, right? Like, I think he is a point guard. Yeah. But like, he's more of a primary initiator than a point guard, right? He's more of a guy you like put the ball in his hands and like tell him to score and play make than like a dribble the ball up the court, like initiate the offense type of guy. Like, that was something that I really noticed like when I was watching OK State games is that they took the ball out of his hands more than I expected on occasion. But
especially
like,
for that team, to your point, like talent level around him to take the ball off his hands really says something.
But he always did it willingly, right? Like he was willing to let other guys on the team try and do their thing in order to get where they needed to go. But like when they absolutely needed him, like he was there. He was making all the plays. He was scoring all the baskets. He was like delivering passes to guys who are open. So it's just like he's just a basketball chameleon, right? Like he fits into every developmental situation you can imagine.
Sorry, not to interrupt you. Okay, the 16th pick to Houston to the Rockets. Wow.
OKC Houston trades.
Wow.
This is interesting though, because like OKC and Houston have trade history, but with a former GM.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. With Maury. Huh. Well, there's your consolidation. I wonder, like you guys said, what did Presti get back?
What does Houston have that you guys would be interested
exactly.
in?
Exactly. That's Kevin what I Porter was going to ask.
Baby.
I mean, I did.
Is this, I'm going to make a prediction here.
Rockets taking Shengun.
Is this to remove protections off future Rockets picks for the Thunder?
Maybe.
Could that be the type of consolidation they went for?
Oh, man, that'd be fantastic.
Because the Rockets owe the Thunder two future picks, top four protected, and a future swap top 10 protected. Could this trade remove some protections?
Wow, that'd be Yeah. Now, Shengun's an interesting pick for Houston with Christian Wood, and I don't know. That really surprises me.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, right? Like, Shengun is like mostly like a post-up player.
Yeah.
Right? And with Wall and KPJ and Jalen Green and Christian Wood, they're going to want to play fast. It's like
not a fast player. That's a great point.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
That is interesting.
To me, at least. Yeah.
Huh.
That is weird.
Now I'm just curious to get the details.
Yeah, I don't know what the Thunder would be getting from Houston besides removal of those picks.
Maybe it's a player, right? Maybe it's like a Jae'Sean Tate or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's old. I'd like
Jae'Sean Tate and Lou Dort just wrecking people's perimeter.
That's Spider-Man point name. Oh man, well that's interesting. Wow.
I'm so anxious. I want to hear what's it for.
What is it for?
Don't leave me hanging. Oh, man. Come on, Woj.
Well, I guess in the meantime, one thing I was going to say about Caden in Detroit, somebody, I'm going to butcher who it was. I'm trying to remember. I want to say it was somebody from The Athletic, but basically talked about one of Cade's best skills being having the ability to just like, kind of like Chris Paul. We talked about this when he was in OKC. He'd play, you know, as he plays for three quarters or whatever. And in the fourth quarter, he just would take over. He was so incredible in the clutch because he spent those first three quarters just analyzing what the defense was giving him. Mm-hmm. And they said something similar about Cade. Like the first 15 minutes of the game, he's going to see what the team needs most. Then he's going to go out and do that thing. If it's passing that night, he'll do it. If it's this creating for others, he'll do it. If it's scoring, he'll do it. He's able to break the game down at such a high level. And that's what really excites me, I think, when you have high IQ players around them, like Weaver has and Killian Hayes and Stewart, some of that youth, combined with obviously Jeremy Grant. I mean, Pistons are going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. The one thing I am a little worried about is that they don't have enough like shooting on the roster right now to surround like Cade and Killian. Killian wasn't a great shooter last year, right? He was better off ball than on ball, but still, like, you don't necessarily want Killian spacing the floor for Cade. You kind of want the opposite. But so I was hoping that they come out of this draft with at least like one more like guy who can like really
knock down shots.
Yeah,
I like that. I'm with you. There's some stuff that has to happen. I'm fascinated to see, first of all, how the rest of this draft plays out, because the Thunder still have picks 34, 36, right? And 55. There's going to be some consolidation there, but I think there's also another player at this point that Presti's probably going to end up with, but there's going to have to be some trades here in between the draft and the start of the season. I'm very fascinated to see what those are.
No, absolutely. They utilized the OKC blue like fairly well, like over the last couple of years. And so I'm less worried about like a roster crunch per se. But like this is like for 2-3 years down the line, right? It's going to be tough to fill out like a playoff, like 8-man rotation. It's going to be tough to know who's going to be in that core, like 8-man rotation, like moving forward, when eventually, hopefully, you do get good, because you can't do this forever, right?
Exactly.
Like, right.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that is interesting, seeing how the Thunder approach tonight is, we've talked so much about their future assets, and it felt like tonight could be the first time you start to see them consolidate, and they didn't.
Right.
They added more future draft picks. They didn't consolidate draft picks to move up. And they're going to bring in multiple players, and they have more draft picks down the line. And at some point, you just wonder when that moment is. Like, at what point does that needle start to turn, and you start to become, okay, we're starting to build a winning roster instead of just stockpiling assets to eventually build a winning roster?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys though, like, what kind of star player would you like to put next to Shea, right? Like, if we're operating under the assumption that like Shea is part of the next iteration of this team that's any good, like, what is the type of complementary player next to him that you wanted to see, that you'd want to see?
Oh, sorry,
I have a thought. I think it's an athletic small forward who has ball handling abilities, but somebody who can work it with Shea in the pick and roll, who can shoot, you know, like Kevin Durant or something like that. Somebody like that.
You're describing Michael Porter Jr.
Oh, hello. No, but really, like, I think somebody that can work with him in the pick and roll and be both a threat to roll and like get a lob at the basket or to pop it. I think Shea's so good in pick and roll that somebody that can complement him there and kind of make his pick and roll game even more lethal, I think it gets me really excited.
I keep thinking of another combo guard, but maybe a little more of a scorer. Not that Shea is. I mean, honestly, I think pairing Shea with another player very similar to himself, which, if we're being completely honest, could potentially be Josh Giddey, although he's more of a wing. But a versatile player who's able to score at all three levels, crafty but can create for others. Another combo guard like that is somebody I have in mind. I mean, obviously, Cade Cunningham. You think of Cade next to Shea, and I think that's perfect. And the reason I say that, and we've talked some about this on the podcast.
Like, yeah, I didn't mean to like twist the knife in you. A little bit.
That's right. Sorry, who would you guys want? Would it be Kay? Maybe? No, not at all. I knew what you meant. I'm just using that as an example because it's an easy example to make. But I think somebody like that would be perfect. The reason we say that is like we saw how well not only the three guard lineup did in OKC during the Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, SGA season, SGA's first season with the Thunder, but also how well Chris and Shea played together. Now, I'm not saying go draft the next Chris Paul necessarily, but I think another playmaker, again, another guard who can score at all three levels would just be perfect next to Shea. Again, versatility, it's going to be the name of the game of Thunder 2.0.
Okay. I was kind of curious if you were thinking more like Phoenix Suns backcourt, right? Like the two guard doubleheaded
that's a good point. Guard
backcourt, or if you were thinking something like closer to
like Steph and Clay, maybe.
Yes, or closer to like Shea is definitely not like Steph or Clay, right? Like he's more of a shot creator, but thinking like the more classic like pick and roll partner, right? Like Shea and AD, right? Like and AD type.
So that's something Jacob, we have a lot of J's. That's something Jacob's talked a lot about this past season, finding that pick and roll partner, that lob threat for Shea to have. I mean, Shea could take advantage of that, and that'd be lethal, which is why I'm kind of – I mean, I get it. There weren't really that many options of that kind of player in this draft outside of maybe Kai Jones, who's super underdeveloped, but I don't know. That's what's so fascinating about what Thunder going to do with this upcoming trying to find a center for this upcoming season.
Good. Yeah, my thought on pairing somebody with Shea is it doesn't really matter who it is. I mean, we've watched Shea play 1, 2, and 3 on this team. You want him off ball? Cool. You want him on ball, diving to the hoop, breaking people down off the dribble? Or you can do that too. You want him spotting up and shooting threes? You want him taking step back threes? You want him playmaking for others? He can do a little bit of all of it. I think the versatility of Shea is maybe one of his best strengths because you can do whatever you want with him.
Yep.
Like it's not like he's a don't take this the wrong way, but he's not like a Damian Lillard where he's like very specifically pigeonholed into one spot. Like Dame can't really guard twos that well. Mm-hmm. Dame sure as hell can't guard threes. He's only playing the one on offense, and Shea is just so versatile that it makes roster building so much easier because of the flexibility you can operate with him.
To that point, Laz, if you had to say what position Shea Gilgeous-Alexander started at or played the majority of his minutes at with OKC this past season, what position would you say?
This past season.
It was two guard, right?
It was small forward.
Really?
Now, that's based off Basketball Reference. Jacob and I did our second annual Thunder player rankings at each position. And yes, I don't get it wrong. Shea was the lead ball handler. He played point guard. He led the offense. But they listed him at small forward in the starting lineups. And when he was in some of those lineups, they listed him at small forward, which is interesting. I think just speaks to that versatility that Jacob was talking about.
I guess that makes sense when I think about the roster. Or what the lineups must have been, right? Like it was like Teo, Dort, and Shea, right? Or something like that. Like in that case, I can see where you can flip flop both of those guys between the 2-3 spots. But yeah, that is really interesting to think about. I was thinking about this question, right? Because I love you guys. I did not watch a whole bunch of Thunder games.
Which is very fair. Yeah. Very fair.
And so I was when the Shea and 6-for-1 trade came up, I was like, well, let me go investigate and see what Shea's been up to. Because I know the production has been up, right? But I don't necessarily know
To dive into film. Absolutely. Right. That makes sense.
Right. And it really surprised me how much of a scoring load he was just carrying and how easily he was getting the basket and the pull-up shooting, I think, was the main thing that that was a crazy thing to just kind of see. And
let me give you a stat real quick, Laz.
Yeah.
Shea shot nearly 42% from three this year on about 5 attempts a game. Okay. 70% of all the threes he took, not the ones he made, every single three he took, 70% of them off the dribble, unassisted. And then less than 5% from the corners. So yeah, as far as the shot creation and the pull up, that was his game. Like, he did not have somebody like a Chris Paul driving and kicking to him and him getting open corner threes. They were all come off the pick and roll. Someone goes under, I pull up. It was come off the pick and roll.
The highest cross ISO somebody up, step back. In the league.
Yeah. It was kind of like Kate Cunningham at Oklahoma State.
No, that is exactly the conclusion I reached. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Cade's like 2 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier, but it's like they looked like very similar types of players. Absolutely. And I think those 2 inches and 30 pounds like matter. Absolutely.
100%.
But like there are going to be guys that like Cade can get a shot over that. There's going to be like you can defend.
Jay has to work for his shot more. I mean, that's why we've seen him incorporate those step backs, particularly this past season, where yes, Cade has a step back. It looks more like a Lucas step back, which is amazing. But you're right. He's going to be that high release point, and also those couple extra inches are going to help him there a lot. Being able to shoot over other defenders, especially if he's the best player on the team, you know, the majority of his career, maybe his entire career, you're going to have the best defender of the other team on you. It's most likely going to be a forward kind of player guarding you. So that you're right. That length, that reach matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the reason why I'm excited that like that Cade can like play off the ball, is because like I feel like it's easier to get good looks when you don't have the ball in your hands all the time. Like this is the Steph Curry thing, right? Like they run Steph Curry through the maze and he gets open threes. And like people say like, oh, like only Steph can make those shots, which is true. But like other guys don't always put in the effort that Steph does to make themselves available for those type of shots.
True.
I feel like if you have it like this, now I'm going back to the Pistons, right? You have a guy like Killian Hayes, who's a threat to operate in the pick and roll. You have you surround that guy with, you know, Sadiq Bey in the corner, you know, Jeremy Grant on the opposite wing, like just enough spacing to like make teams like think, and all of a sudden you're passing the ball to Cade, as like a second side thing with like a little bit of advantage, and he can just go, right? And like that, right. Like that's really intriguing to me as a way to get Cade some buckets that he like doesn't have to dribble the ball for 20 seconds against the other team's best player or best like perimeter defender in order to get.
When you were saying that, Laz, like we haven't really talked about Killian Hayes that much. I really think Hayes going to be great for Killian. I already thought that Killian was going to have a better season this coming season, obviously coming off injury and all that. I'm still pretty high on Killian, but I think him alongside Cade, like Cade's the type of player who's going to really, I think, help and benefit, playing alongside a player like Killian. I really, really like that fit.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, Killian really struggled, right? Really obvious to look at, like, even in the box score. But like the flashes of like the spectacular stuff that you saw from Killian, like, made you think that like with a full off season, with like a real off season, not like, you know, training by yourself in Florida for 8 months during a global pandemic. It's like with a more structured off season and with the team, with an actual summer league, right? Like, you can go into next season with something like a little bit more resembling like an NBA base. And
exactly,
I think I'm really, really curious to see how this plays out in summer league, because like summer league, like you can't take, you know, everything from summer league, right? Like who's like Michael Beasley had like the most amazing summer league we'd ever seen in our lives. Right. Yes. And like, look how that ended up. But at the same time, like, I want to see how those two guys play together. Right, like I want to see if it's like a Russell Westbrook, or I want to see if it's like a Chris Paul James Harden thing, where it's just like, it's your turn, my turn, but like it works, right? Like I bring the ball up, now you bring the ball up, now I bring the ball up, you know, you bring the ball up, and like we're both like operating out of pick and rolls, we're both operating out of isolations, but like we're not necessarily like getting each other like super involved on offense. But I want to see if it's more like a more symbiotic relationship, right? I want to see if they're both of those guys are like using their amazing passing ability to get guys open, to get each other open. I remember there's a play against Sacramento where and like Sacramento's not the greatest defense in the world, but Killian set like a back screen, like a sudden back screen for, I think it was Corey Joseph, on Harrison Barnes, and they swing the ball on the opposite, on the weak side, right? Like on the opposite side of where the ball is at, they swing the ball to Corey Joseph. Killian's like, because Killian's setting like a flare screen, Like the Sacramento's defense is just like, wait, like guards can set screens? Like you're not allowed to do that. And like Corey Joseph like walks in for a layup. And it's just like you see the basketball like feel that Killian has, and you place like another like high feel shot creator guy in Cade like next to him, and you're just gonna like random stuff like that's gonna happen like all the time. Right? Like Cade's gonna post up in transition, and Killian's just gonna like feed him the ball, and he's gonna like lay the ball in because he's being guarded by like a 6'4 dude and he's 6'8. Right? Like just the like weird basketball moments we're gonna get between those two guys are like what I'm really looking forward to. And I hope they get the chance to play together a lot. Or as much as they can like stand in Vegas Summer League.
There's definitely some tangibles to take from Summer League, especially for teams like Detroit and OKC, right? Like we're going to be looking at guys, some of these young guys who we're expecting to take leaps this offseason, such as your Teos. I mean, Poku, we're hoping he's going to be playing in the Summer League. Mm-hmm. Guys like that, like, you know, there's a lot of things we're going to be looking for there as well. Also love the point you made, Laz, about at having a full NBA or honestly, not a full quote unquote off season in NBA terms, but much more normal off season compared to the past 2 years that we've seen. You know, that's something we talked about. You know, you asked us about Bazley, our feelings on Bazley earlier. One reason we do still kind of have the disclaimer that, you know, Bazley, what an unconventional route this guy took from, you know, playing high school basketball, deciding not to go to college, doing the New Balance internship and training with Mike Miller, comes into the league. He has his rookie season that ends in March because of the pandemic. He basically has a 3-month NBA offseason between that, goes to the NBA bubble where he's still a rookie technically, but right, like he's had 3 months between that, plays in this bubble and then has a shortened offseason. And now he, you know, is playing year two in the NBA. And it's not just Bazley. I mean, it's all these players, I think. So yeah, that's a great point about Killian as well. It's going to be fascinating to see like players from that draft class, which ones really kind of stand out this coming season, which ones have really taken a bigger leap after getting a more conventional offseason. And Killian might be one of those guys. Bazley might be one of those guys.
No, definitely. Yeah,
I think you'll probably see it across that whole draft class.
Yeah,
like true. I'm really curious to see how they do in Summer League. I'm curious to see how they do, you know, into next season. Like, what does it look like for these guys to get a little bit of a sense of normalcy that they haven't had? Like, making the transition to the NBA is hard enough, let alone
right
doing it through these circumstances that they've had to go through. I think it makes it a little tough to even evaluate guys from that draft class because they've faced circumstances that nobody else really has.
Okay. Hey, so we're back. We're going to talk about the second round guys now. The Pistons took Isaiah Livers with the 42nd overall pick. I liked this pick. Livers, many of you listening to this podcast are familiar with the stylings of Isaiah Livers because he played at the University of Michigan. A guy who is really known as a shooter, a knockdown shooter. If you've listened to me talk about the Pistons on this podcast or other podcasts, you know that an element of shooting is something that, like, I think the Pistons have been missing for quite some time. And if, like, I'm tripping over my words and stuff, forgive me. It's 12:50 in the morning. We're recording this live. So yeah, but that's just what we're doing. But yeah, he can shoot. Livers can shoot. That's important. The Pistons needed a dude who could shoot. And so I think that there's like a non-trivial chance that like Livers actually sees rotation minutes for this Pistons team this year. Yeah, that's the thing that matters the most, honestly, is that the Pistons found somebody who can fill that particular role. And like, yeah, the roster across other guys was like, hey, you know, Frank Jackson can shoot. Obviously, Sadiq Bey can shoot. Obviously, Cade Cunningham can shoot. But you need more role players like Sadiq. You need more guys who the Cade Cunninghams and the Killian Hayes and the Jeremy Grants are going to play off of. And that seems to be like what Isaiah Livers, the type of player that Isaiah Livers is going to be in the NBA. With the upside for more, right? You know, prior to the injury, I think that there was a thought that Livers had, you know, a shot to have a little bit more on ball creation. I think that's kind of out the window now, but I don't, like, they should still try and develop that aspect of his game. Obviously, I just don't know if it'll ever get there with regards to like how he'll be able to do that against like NBA defenses. But I like this pick. It was a very solid pick by Troy Weaver. Fills a need. A guy people are familiar with. Good skill set. It's like, yeah, this is a solid pick. The other picks, oh my goodness. The Pistons executed in the second round tonight. Luka Garza. So Luka Garza was the center from Iowa, obviously. Like, big whole super list of accomplishments, right? Like, Big Ten Player of the Year, Naismith finalist and stuff. Just a very decorated college player. However, like, real concerns about how that's going to translate to the NBA. 6'11 center, can shoot the ball. It's like, okay, so the thing that people are worried about translating is not the offense, it's the defense. Offensively, he can shoot the ball. He's got a zillion different like post-up moves. And it's like, yes, although that like people don't utilize post-ups anymore, is like, because he's so good at it, you figure he's not going to be like a starting level center, again, because of the defense. But like, he can get away with executing those type of post moves against like backup lineups and like stealing you a couple buckets that way. And that's useful, right? Like, that's how like Enes Kanter is still in this league, right? Is being able to make a living crashing the offensive glass and killing people in the post for bench lineups during the regular season. And like, Enes Kanter doesn't shoot threes. And if Enes Kanter like could shoot threes, like, he'd be a much more interesting NBA player. Luka Garza can shoot threes, so that does make him interesting. Lots of people were telling me about Garza's like pick and pop ability. That will be something that warrants mentioning, or like warrants keeping a look at. I wonder how he'll handle the like the extra step back from the college line to the NBA line. That's not an adjustment that like happens. You don't want to take that adjustment for granted, right? Like, we saw that adjustment from Isaiah Stewart last year relatively quickly. You don't want to just assume that the exact same thing will happen from Luka Garza. But like, you understand, like, with the rapid development of Isaiah Stewart, you understand like why they feel pretty confident that like they can also get Garza to shoot threes. And so like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about those two guys in comparison to one another, right? Not necessarily, like, obviously Garza a much more decorated player, and obviously I think Stewart is like a little bit is more athletic and with better foot speed able to be better defensively. But like, this is the second non-jumping, offensively skilled, like burly, tall, not like extreme shot blocker, but still contests a lot of shots around the rim center that Troy Weaver has drafted, right? I know, if you've listened to me in the past, you know I've been after the jumpy jump guys. This is another center who is not necessarily a jumpy jump guy, right? And so, and two is a pattern, right? Like, maybe this is something that we're learning about Troy Weaver, which is maybe like, he doesn't necessarily like the centers who mainly like rim run and are lob threats, and that's their like primary function on offense. He wants like a little bit more versatility out of his centers, which is understandable, right? Garza, yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I think there's a world in which he works. Okay, wait, actually no, go back. See, yeah, this is again, this is me at 1 o'clock in the morning, so we're going at this point, and I didn't want to like drink any coffee or anything, but like, here we are. The defense. So Garza is supremely skilled in small areas on offense, right? Like, the footwork is great. The setting up like his post up moves, that's, he does a great job of that. But like in the NBA on defense, you need to be able to like slide laterally and cover a lot of ground laterally. Garza does not do an amazing job of that. This was apparent even at the college level, that you could give Iowa trouble by like pulling Garza away from the basket and asking him and asking like the defense to adjust from there. This is of course a problem for a lot of centers, right? Like, you know, you want to go to the highest level of NBA center. Like, this is something that people make fun of Rudy Gobert for not being able to do, right? So this is not, not to compare Luka Garza to Rudy Gobert, because like that's not a thing. But that is to say, just like, this is a thing that like a lot of big men struggle with, and so it's not, you know, insane to think that like Luka Garza could also like be successful while struggling with this. With that said, right, like, again, to use the Enes Kanter example, like, Enes Kanter has stayed in the league because of his offense, but he's never been, he had like one stretch in Portland where he was a like semi-effective defensive big in a specific coverage, drop coverage, and aside from that, and like that was like with really good personnel around him, and like aside from that, Enes Kanter has been like a huge defensive negative for his entire career, right? And that's been part of the reason why he's bounced around a lot of places despite being as good as he is offensively. I fear the same sort of use case future career for Luka Garza, where he's good enough offensively to stay in the NBA, not good enough defensively to stick and be part of a winning team, be part of a playoff rotation, for example. And so like that, that presents problems in the long term. If you want this Pistons team to, you know, be in the playoffs eventually, it doesn't really seem like Luka Garza is going to be in the rotation when they do that, because of the problems he's going to pose on defense. I mean, like that said, though, like this is not the pick I would have made, but that does not make it a terrible pick. Garza, I think, is a really interesting player. He's obviously had. It's like you can't be as successful as he was in college and be like a quote unquote like bad player. And so for Garza, it's just going to be a matter of either, getting better in space defensively, right? Like maybe there's like some hip exercises he can do to move better laterally. Maybe there's some some untapped strength and conditioning stuff the Pistons can get him to be, you know, not a huge, huge negative, only like a minor negative defensively on that end of the floor, and then the offense like kind of takes care of itself. But like that's a probable high end outcome for Garza as he figures it out defensively. I'm not 100% sure. Like Garza's on the team in 3 years, like that just point blank period. But I think there's a chance it works, right? He's going to get an opportunity, right? Like, after the Mason Plumlee trade, which I guess we should talk about probably, actually. After the Mason Plumlee trade earlier on draft night, like, the Pistons only have Isaiah Stewart and Jahlil Okafor on the roster as centers before, drafting Garza and the other guy. So, it's like Garza's going to get an opportunity to like play minutes on this Pistons team, I would assume, right? People on Twitter were saying stuff like, "Oh, he's gonna stay with the Crews the whole year." He's 22 years old, and like the backup center for the Pistons is currently Jahlil Okafor. Like Garza's probably gonna play. I mean, like I wouldn't expect him to be amazing, but I probably would expect him to play. I mean, like, we'll see how he looks in summer league, but yeah, if you're giving me a choice between Luka Garza and Jahlil Okafor, like at least I know what like Jahlil Okafor is on defense, and I would like to see like what Luka Garza could or couldn't do defensively. Also, like, man, think about those bigs, right? Isaiah Stewart, Luka Garza, Jahlil Okafor, just like bunch of ground bound dudes who a bunch of dudes who don't necessarily wow you with athleticism but are strong and crafty in the post. Yeah Jahlil Okafor not a unreasonable low end outcome for Luka Garza. Well, I mean, with the shooting, the shooting obviously is like the thing that probably helps elevate Garza like above an Okafor. But like, yeah, you get what I'm trying to say, right? Like, Jahlil has kind of been unfortunate on defense, But like, we'll get you 8 points in 4 minutes if you throw him the ball enough. I think Garza could probably do something like that. Yeah, it's late. I'm sorry. I'm like rambling at this point. But yeah, like I don't hate the Garza pick. I'm willing, after everything that we've been through with Troy Weaver, I'm willing to give Luka Garza. It's like, after everything we've been through with Troy Weaver and like as good as Garza was in college, like I'm willing to give it a shot. I don't think it's going to work, but I'm willing to try because, you know, why not? Why not? And then Balsa Koprivica. I hope I'm saying that last name like Koprivica. 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 Balsa. We're just going to go with Balsa. I know literally nothing about this dude. He went to Florida State. It's like that's what we got on the initial Google. He was outside of Sam Vecenie's top 100, which lets you know that like I am not the only person who doesn't know that much about Balsa. A couple YouTube searches later, the thing that I can pretty confidently say is that, like, he's a center. He's 7 feet tall. I don't think he's a stiff, right? He appeared to jump well. He not amazingly, but like fairly well, smoothly, got off the ground relatively quick. Appeared to move well on defense. He's not Bam Adebayo out there, but he looked more capable of handling himself in space than Garza, for example. But like again, this is like, you know, it's 5 minutes of YouTube video, so I don't know if this is actually the case or not. And he looked very much like not a stiff, right? What does that mean for his future on the team? Like, this seems like the dude that's going to be on the cruise, right? Like, this seems like the guy is like, this is the developmental big. Maybe the Pistons see something in Balsa that the rest of the scouts can miss. But, I don't have an amazing level of comfort telling you exactly like what's going to be up with this guy next season. So I'm just going to immediately project he's going to play for the Crews and maybe it'll be cool. Maybe it won't. It's the 57th overall pick. I'm not going to get mad about it if it's not happening. So yeah, that's the three picks the Pistons made in the second round. I'm going to talk about the Mason Plumlee trade too. So the Pistons traded Mason Plumlee and the 37th overall pick to the Charlotte Hornets for the 57th overall pick. This opened up, $8 million roughly in cap space, created a $8 million trade exception, roughly. The Pistons are turning things over to Isaiah Stewart in the front court because he was much, much better than they expected him to be right away, and I think that's a good thing, right? At least we like really get to see what Isaiah Stewart has got to offer from a starting level position for the Pistons, and like I'm comfortable with that. I think it's going to go pretty well. I don't know if Mason Plumlee's contract wasn't so bad that they like needed to get off it, but I understand the desire to like not have Mason on the roster just so you don't feel pressured to have him play. But yeah. 2 years, $16 million worth of Mason Plumlee is not worth, quote-unquote, worth, like, moving down 20 spots in the draft, especially considering some of the names that we saw available at 37 in this, like, admittedly kind of funky NBA draft. But, yeah, like, ultimately, I don't think it's that big a deal. I mean, like, this is the same. I find myself, like, talking about and thinking about, like, how what I was saying like after the initial like Troy Weaver purge, and it's just like I don't know what's happening, like none of this makes sense. And at the end there's like a coherent, clear vision of like what the team should look like moving forward. And so like when you use Mason Plumlee's deal to move down 20 spots in the draft and draft a guy that like is probably gonna, again, in Balsa, who's probably gonna play on the Cruise next year, it's just like, yeah man, maybe it's gonna work. Maybe Troy Weaver's a genius. I mean, like he's obviously like a basketball like scouting genius who sees things that other people don't. But it's like I'm not going to try and interpret his genius at 1:06 a.m. in the morning, the night after the draft, the morning after the draft. So yeah, not. I did think that the Pistons were going to try and use that cap space to absorb some bad assets to grab another first round pick. That didn't happen, obviously. Like, that was a little disappointing. It has been interesting to think about what kind of player might fit into an $8 million trade player exception. I'm going to do some Googling right quick and just distract you with the sound of my voice while I look up the salary for one Marvin Bagley, who is trying to get out of Sacramento something terribly. And he makes way too much money. He makes too much money to fit inside the Mason Plumlee traded player exception. And so, like, that's not a possibility. Bagley has been raised as a possibility. If you remember, if I remember correctly, the Kings offered Bagley for Sadiq Bey at the deadline and were quickly told no. But I do think, actually, I don't know. Again, like, when I go back to think about, like, the type of centers that Troy Weaver has, like, brought into Detroit, Bagley doesn't really seem like that type of dude. So, like, maybe the Pistons are interested in Marvin Bagley. Maybe they're not. But that's, like, the hot name in the streets, these NBA Twitter streets. So I gotta talk about it. I brought up Zach Collins as another center I would be interested in, just because, like, before all the injuries and all the, like, weird foot injuries and the inability to stay on the court for any real length of time, like, there was a really interesting prospect in the Gonzaga version of Zach Collins. And if you can get that guy healthy, maybe he still got that interesting prospect, like, somewhere deep within. But it's like, yeah. And because of the injuries, I think he'd be cheap. But now the Pistons have four centers, and so that's probably less likely. And so Luka Garza will have to do his best Zach Collins impersonation. And so, yeah, that's pretty much all the non-Cade stuff that happened on draft night. Again, talked to the uncontested about Cade Cunningham, about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, about some other stuff. And you heard that a little bit earlier, so that's great. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. I apologize again, kind of rambly. 1:08 a.m. I'm losing it over here a little bit, but thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. I also host the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. You can find that on the podcast platform that you are listening to this podcast on. This has been Pistons versus Everybody. Thank you for listening. And we will talk to you probably before summer league, after summer league. Yeah, I mean, like, you guys know my, like, life thing, right? Like, my son, like, may or may not be coming in the next, like, week or two. And so, like, you know, maybe I have time, maybe I don't. But, like, yeah, well, with summer league and everything, like, we will release some podcasts in the future. I reassure you, trust me. But yeah, I don't know exactly when. Life is a highway. Okay, I'll talk to you guys later. See ya.